There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, everybody, before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, if you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratifications of DFS, then you have to try out Weekly Fantasy Sports WFS on Owner's Box. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will also be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $500 for any depositors through January 4th. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $500 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Now, to this episode of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 345. Going to talk about some recent fantasy baseball news, a RotoFanatics new tool, well, not new to me, but new barrel boards, and talk some point league strategy, which we don't get to talk about a ton. In order to do so, we have a first-time guest of the show. Really looking forward to talking to this individual. You can find us where at RotoFanatic, at Fantasy Pros. He's on Twitter at Carm's Clubhouse. Carmen Mayorano, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Bubba. Thanks so much for having me on. Super pumped to talk baseball with you tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to do this. It's going to be fun. Before we kind of get cracking on all this, I want to let the listeners know, like, obviously I told them where they could find you, but like what you got going on, a little background about who Carmen is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got started in with Fantasy Pros about 5 years ago. I started at the bottom rung of the ladder, was doing game recaps. Night and day, it felt like it was pretty monotonous, but I think it really helped me develop my writing and it helped me stick to that commitment of writing every day, which was super helpful. And then after that, started in DFS, started doing long form articles, got all the free perks on FanDuel and DraftKings for doing those. So just kind of learned DFS strategy a little bit, was happy to write about value plays. And then, last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of evergreen strategy content for Fantasy Pros. About a year ago, started my own website, carmsclubhouse.com. That kind of comes from backyard baseball, the nostalgic video game from like 20 years ago. Pablo Sanchez, you know, the best video game baseball player of all time, as I'm sure you're aware, Bubba.
Oh, yes.
Then Matt Williams, RotoFanatic, kind of noticed my work I was doing on some similar type of, not barrel boards, but expected batting average by type of contact. Yeah, he reached out to me. He asked me multiple times to join RotoFanatic. Finally, finally gave in, said yes. Got on their podcast a handful of times throughout the short season last year, and it's been going well. We all have great chemistry, so I kind of joined as a co-owner over the offseason. And, you know, I'm working with Paul Mimino, Matt, Mike Govier. You were just on his podcast, and Crosby Spencer. And we're just having a blast coming up with new tools, trying to help you guys win fantasy leagues.
Yeah, it's awesome. First, like a couple things you mentioned there that I think are great, just kind of words of advice to people, that when you started out, you started at the bottom, worked your way up. That's what we all do. Like, you don't just walk into the door and, you know, you got this. Like, sometimes the being the humble person is starting at the bottom. It gets you to where you want to be. So that's a very important thing. And then you also mentioned is write every day. And I think that's something that I even try to just make myself do. Because if you start taking days off, it's hard to get back into the groove. It really is. So it doesn't have to be long articles or anything. Kind of writing every day, I think, is very helpful for the process. Like, that's a good thing. And so I think there's a lot of good stuff you mentioned there. And Roto Fanatic, like I said to you before the show, I talked to Govier about your guys' tools. I'm still learning them, but there's a lot to like there. The Data Monster tool, the Barrels tool that we're going to talk about tonight, that Park Factors tool. I've made a point in my articles where I use it to tell them where to find it, and I don't even work for the company. So it's like, this is where you need to go to get your Park Factors. So there's a lot of cool stuff there. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys have coming up next. It'll be a lot of fun there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, before we get on with the show, I just want to congratulate you on Tout Wars. That is an incredible accomplishment. That is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I don't know really what else to say, but I woke up to the DM a couple mornings ago and I was just like, okay, didn't expect this to come through. Cool. Because, and I've had a lot of people reach out like through DMs and just like, on the Twitter and everything. And it's pretty cool because, you know, a lot of people make fun of these big, like, you know, I call them analyst leagues.
Yeah.
I understand the stigma of experts. I get that. I am not an expert at all.
Right.
I even told people, I'm going to prove to you these are analyst leagues, not expert leagues. But when you start in the industry, if you're starting because you love actually producing content for fantasy sports, you look up to Tout Wars. You look up to those things. So, you know, when I started, I never thought. Like, I just did this podcast because I love talking about baseball. And then I started writing a little bit. And then I got that. I was like, that's pretty cool. So, yeah. Like, people think it's silly when I get kind of, like, really excited about it. But I'm like, no, it's pretty much what your goal is. That's one of the end games right there.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Once again, man, it's an incredible accomplishment.
I appreciate it. Let's get into the recent news. And these are just kind of blips because we really haven't any signings, really haven't any trades. They start playing games this weekend, so we might get to actually see some data from all that. But a couple of things here. Dodgers are expecting Cody Bellinger to be ready for opening day. Even as of Wednesday, Cody said he's feeling great, which most players will say. But if he's ready for opening day, that's kind of a concern because like a month ago, there were reports that he's kind of slow from recovery and everything. If he's 100% come opening day, are you still in on his draft price, like in the round one, early round two in a 15-teamer?
Yeah, so in my rankings and my projections, I have kind of baked in that slight injury risk he has into those projections. And I kind of see him as a guy on the turn, as you said, late round one, early round two. I mean, if we keep getting this good news that he's going to be healthy for opening day, I'm happily going to take him on the turn in a 15-teamer, probably pair him with, you know, if a starter falls, probably not. But, you know, that strategy for another day. But, yeah, I could see taking him where he's going.
Yeah, I haven't grabbed him yet because I was concerned. Because, you know, shoulder injury, that's right in line with sapping power. And if you're drafting Cody, you want that 35-plus homer upside with the steals, which is great. But if he's only going to hit, like, 20, 25 homers, well, you can do that later on. So right. It just makes it a little different. And the news is good. So maybe come middle to end of March, after he gets, like, four home runs in spring, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Yoan Moncada, this is a guy that I'm a big fan of going into 2021. He even said COVID basically made it very difficult last year. He's one that actually spoke about it. So I'm giving him that pass. Like, I'm just throwing that one out there. He's this was new to me because I didn't think he was hurt at all, but he's got arm. They didn't say where the soreness was in the article. It wasn't shoulder, elbow, what, but he's limited on throwing right now. Does this make you take a step back on Yoan Moncada right now?
A little bit. It always seems like he's dealing with some sort of ache and pain, right? If it's not like a full blown injury. There's a couple interesting points here. One being, you know, the White Sox right now don't have like a true DH. They're going to play Eloy in left field. Maybe they could put Moncada at DH, let his elbow or whatever is bothering him kind of heal up that way. But it just kind of seems like there's something always wrong with him. And I want my guys in the first 10 rounds to basically be like relatively risk-free. I know that's virtually impossible, but if someone is already dealing with something in spring training, it kind of backs me off just a little bit.
Yeah, it's like you already know you're going to draft 29 to 30 players, and you're going to get a handful of injuries no matter what. So drafting a guy already with an injury is probably like, am I really going to go do that? Like, what's the way, especially early in the draft, like you're saying.
Right.
Take your risks later.
Yeah. With Moncada, did you hear that he's like trying to become a pop star? He's been making music and everything.
I heard that on Under the Radar.
Under the Radar. That's what I heard it this morning.
That's the one thing with that show that makes me laugh, because they dig deep on things that I would never think of finding. But yeah, I guess he's made a music video.
Yeah.
But they made the point to say that he's going to put it on hold during the season and he'll start again in the next, which made me feel better. But yeah, I had no idea. I almost, part of me wants to go look it up.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Something that could be playing into that arm soreness is like, was he not like training as hard in the off season because he was doing this music stuff? Like, I don't want people putting words in my mouth saying like he's not focusing on baseball, but I mean, it's something that might have to be considered.
It's a valid concern. It really is. Like, you know, it'll be interesting. You've Jeff Kent fell off his truck, washing his truck, hurt himself. There's guys that have skiing accidents. Now you have all these contracts where you can't skydive. You can't go skiing. Now you can't make pop videos. That'll probably be like the next one. It's going to be so funny coming up here. JD Martinez, obviously, we all know, had a rough 2020. And a lot of that was credited, many said, to the lack of video he could watch, which is a big thing for some of these guys now. But he flat out said in the interviews on Tuesday that he wasn't ready for 2020. And all offseason, he'd been working on his mechanics. Like he said, he flat out was swinging at pitches he never swung at before. He was just a mess, which is kind of makes me step back and go, so that wasn't even an in-game situation. That was just a general situation. So what's your thoughts on JD now?
Yeah, I think I read that same interview, and the words, like the quote, like chip on his shoulder was in there like seven times. Yep. And I know that's kind of cliche, but we've seen JD Martinez kind of like do this before, turn around his career completely. As much as I love stats and projections, you can't quantify will and determination. Mm-hmm. So I could see JD completely, when I say completely, like how about 85 to 90% of his peak seasons, he could probably be a top 25 bat again, and you're getting him so late in the draft.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like I'm pulling up his ADP. NFBC online just for the month of February, they've completed 15 drafts. His ADP is 94.
Yeah.
Like you're starting, if you, like you said, if you get 80 to 90% of JD Martinez at pick 94, that's pretty good. He's always had the batting average, and I throw 30 plus homers in there, because that Red Sox offense, the team as a whole is not going to win a lot of games, but they're going to score runs.
Right. And then on Under the Radar, they mentioned how like Ketel Marte was pressing, being too aggressive because of the short season. Sounds like JD was going through the same thing, swinging at pitches he never would have felt that pressure. Probably from he said he was not as prepared, so he's obviously taking those preparations now. The only thing that's preventing me from taking JD in a draft is that I still love Nelson Cruz.
Yeah,
and I'm obviously not drafting two utility guys.
That's a big downside. Now, if you're playing on Yahoo, they're using 2019's eligibility, and hey,
right,
go get them. Yeah, because right. Nelson Cruz going around pick 90, so like they're 3 to 4 picks apart right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I'm with you. I'll take Will Nelly in that one for sure. Texas Rangers, there's a lot of people that are high on Sam Huff as catcher, and I'm not one of them. I believe that it's Trevino's job for now, and you'll go from there. And even some of the beat reporters are saying – they love Huff, but he's going to start in the minors once he and maybe gets called up midseason or so. But this will really put temperament on it. Sam Huff, hamstring injury, likely not to start the season in the big. They're already flat out saying it. So can we all agree now, do not draft Sam Huff?
Do not draft Sam Huff.
Okay. I wanted to mention that. Like, I knew this wouldn't take a ton of analysis, but I just wanted to mention, can we agree that the news is there?
Right. And they traded for Jonah Heim too from Oakland, right? So they definitely have options. The only sort of analysis I can give here is that I really like Francisco Mejia as like a back end second catcher, third catcher in best ball leagues. So obviously staying completely away from Huff.
Yeah, Mejia's a guy that I'm just like begging that the new change of scenery and hopefully every day at bats, he can click back into his offensive prowess. Like the defense has always been a question. That's why they tried to play him at third for a while and all, like that's been an issue. But his bat was never won.
Right.
So like let's figure that out. And even the way he finished 2019, he finished it hitting really good.
Right.
So I'm curious there. Let's talk Toronto Blue Jays, Tyler Chatwood. They signed him, and many thought, you know, they've had six or seven pitchers there, maybe six-man rotation. Well, they've come out and said Tyler Chatwood's a late-inning reliever, so you can cross that one off the books. Any other Blue Jays thoughts over here?
Yeah, I think with Chatwood being a late inning reliever, that kind of gives me hope that Ross Stripling is going to be sort of in the rotation, maybe make 18 to 20 starts. He was an all-star 3 years ago in that rotation. I think he's still going around like ADP 400, if not later, after the news that, you know, he's potentially not in the rotation full time. I think he's a great late round dart throw.
Yeah, he hasn't even been drafted in an online league yet. So that'll tell you how late he's going. So he's going in draft champions, best balls, stuff like that right now. Like even his teammate Robbie Ray, who I'm not advocating drafting Robbie Ray, he's going to pick 320. So there's late Blue Jays value given the ballparks they're going to pitch in this year. Dunedin, Buffalo, whatever, might not be great. So something to keep in mind there. And the last bit of news we have here, Brett Anderson signs with the Milwaukee Brewers and is expected to be in the starting rotation. Now, again, not saying run to go get Brett Anderson, but this is a team that's always looking for starters. He's usually pretty reliable. In a deep format, is he in play for you, or is this just like a pure streaming option?
Honestly, just maybe based or biased because I'm a Cubs fan, but he was on the Cubs for whatever year that was. He made one start, like three innings in, had a bulky back, didn't pitch again. But I'm looking at his metrics, like 16.2% career strikeout rate. Like I can't, it's really hard for me to get behind that when he's pitched more than 175 innings, I think just once in his career, given that everyone is going to have shorter innings. It's not as much of a concern, but I think there's better late round dart throws than Anderson.
Yeah, I'm with you. It'll be interesting. Maybe he has a couple weeks we can stream him or something, but I don't see the long-term viability with Brett Anderson. And on the flip side, I saw today, I'm a big Freddy Peralta fan. They already said they're stretching him out, and I'm intrigued there. I'm not expecting him to start in the rotation, but he could have a kind of Josh Hader-y type role from back in the day, and that could turn into a starter or something. So I like that quite a bit.
Yeah. The weird thing about the Brewers is I feel like they have like four of the same starting pitcher with like Hauser, Lindblom, Anderson, and even Eric Lauer. It's just like they just want to somehow eat innings to get to Devin Williams, Peralta, and Hader. It just seems like.
It could be a couple of, like you mentioned, like four or five guys, or it could be two starts every week where it's like an opener and then like two guys go three innings each and then get to the bullpen. Like that could be it real easily. And honestly, for the Brewers, that might be their best strategy. Yes. Something to think about. All right, let's talk about this fastball barrels board. It's very intriguing to me because as StatCast grows, as data grows, barrels is still one of those stats that we know is one of the stickiest. There's more sticky stats that have been coming as more smart people like yourself keep learning and developing them. But barrels is one of those that we can go to and go, okay, this is something we can trust. Now, you made a barrel board. What is the fastball barrel board?
Yeah. So at its most basic level, the fastball barrel board is trend analysis for barrel rates on fastballs. So what that means is I'm looking at 2018 barrel rates on fastballs and comparing them to 2019 and 2020 combined barrel rates on fastballs and seeing how the percentage increased or decreased. I combined 19 to 20 because I didn't think 20 had a large enough sample size. We know that barrels are sticky and very predictive. However, just to be sure, I did combine 19 to 20. So if you're looking at the barrel board, the y-axis is the actual barrel rate on fastballs for 2019 and 2020 combined. For example, Miguel Sano had a ridiculous 27% barrel rate on fastballs, just like insane. The x-axis is showing the increase or decrease from 18 to 19 and 20 combined on those barrel rates on fastballs. Sano, I believe, had a 13% increase from 18 to 19 and 20, which is also absurd. So you'll see him in the far right corner. That's just an example. The fastball barrel board to me is a great place to kind of start a deep dive of analysis. We know that barrels are sticky. We know that fastballs are typically thrown at least 50% of the time to a batter. So we know that those outcomes are important. So if I can see if a guy, you know, improved a lot, like a Sano on fastballs throughout the past couple of years, or on the flip side, like a guy like Tyler O'Neill, you'll see him like on the very bottom left, which is kind of absurd because we always look at him as like a power masher, like just killing baseballs. That really fell off in 19 and 20. So those are interesting things that I like to pick up on and then kind of start my deep dive of analysis based on that.
No, I love it because like you said, it's a kind of a starting point, which is, I think that should be for almost any stat we use. And I know Matt Williams, who you work with at Roto Fanatic, I'm in some group chats with him and he mentions it when he tweets out like a list of players based on a stat. He said you want to have a list and you want to have like one or two names that shouldn't be there.
Right.
And it makes a ton of sense when you think about it because that's what makes you dive in more. So like just seeing Tyler O'Neill by itself makes you want to like look at Tyler O'Neill and go, well, what's going on here?
Right.
Or like on the flip side, his teammate Harrison Bader is like all the way on the other side. So it's like when you think, if you were just thinking outside the box without looking at the sheet, you would think those two guys would be flipped.
Exactly. Exactly. And it actually makes sense that Bader has a full-time job in center field and O'Neill is riding the bench. Like after you look at this analysis, you're like, it actually makes sense now.
Yeah. Like you got guys like Brandon Lau, who I like always refuse to buy into, but you look at the growth from 18 to 19, 20, just 19 and 20% barrel rate. And just like, he's right next to Gary Sanchez for crying out loud. Like,
yes. Yes.
It's crazy.
It is. It is. And the best part about Lau is that he saw fastballs in 2020, about 47% of the time. And a typical hitter will see him 50 to 55% of the time. So it's not like they can throw him less fastballs. He's already at the very bottom edge of that. I don't see him getting less fastballs. And to me, that gives him more of a floor than the fantasy community in general wants to give him.
That's a great point. See, there's another argument for Lau, like you mentioned. I'm trying to find them and I struggle. But when you say like the average batter faces 50% and he's getting below average, like you're saying, this is his floor. So that's pretty awesome, because maybe I don't even know what here, but maybe there's some one of these guys in the green who sees like 65%. And they're like, okay, well, now if he faces a steady off speed diet for like 2 weeks, this could get really, he could be Tyler O'Neill. So right, exactly. This could be really scary. So that's interesting as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Like last year I did some expected batting average by pitch type. And what you were saying happened exactly with Ian Happ. Ian Happ in 19 was absolutely miserable against fastballs. And he saw like 60% of them. I'm like, there's no way he's going to be good. And then he completely proved me wrong. So this analysis, of course, is not foolproof, but like we both said, it's like a great way to just start looking at guys who jump out at you who otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, and there's some that you'd expect. Like, you got the big power hitters, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are up in the left. But then you got guys like Chris Davis, who's been struggling with Chris with a K, who's been struggling lately, and he's far on the left. So maybe there's another thing that kind of rings a bell and makes you want to dig into, did he see more fast or more off speed pitches or just not hitting fastballs? Like, I'm trying to see where he's at on the list, but maybe I have to like separate it. I'd expect Keston here to be somewhere pretty interesting on this list, but yeah, this is a really cool, like Josh Bell's over there, a guy that I've struggled to buy in on. So when you're using this, so you're doing the fastballs here, like you said, about 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. Do you have any interest in using like an off-speed one?
Yeah, my goal, with this, I've got a baby coming on the way, so we'll
Congratulations.
See. Thank you very much. So the goal is to get a breaking ball barrel board going and an off-speed barrel board going. I think it's going to bleed into the season, but I think it'll still be early enough to where it'll be relevant for folks to kind of take a deep dive and understand exactly where their fantasy hitters are, making their hay. Basically, is it on fastballs? Is it on breaking balls? It's going to be super interesting analysis. What I try and do after I look at the barrel board is I try and tie in the Data Monster, our other new tool. Essentially, that is looking at plate discipline for hitters. It's basically taking into account how often a hitter swings in the zone based on pitch type, location, as well as pitch count. For example, like Brandon Lau, Gary Sanchez, they swing and miss all the time. Like, there's just no way around that. And as a result, their influence on them swinging is low. For example, if David Fletcher is batting and he swings and misses, that's a much bigger deal than a guy like Brandon Lau or Gary Sanchez, because David Fletcher never swings and misses. Yeah. So the pitcher really had a great influence on getting Fletcher to swing and miss just because he never does it. And on the flip side, I'd say like a guy like Shane Bieber, like he's going to get guys to swing and miss all the time. Like Brandon Lau and Gary Sanchez are probably going to whiff on them a lot as well. But then you take a guy, say like Ryan Yarbrough or Brad Keller, like you would expect them to not whiff as much. But if they're whiffing on all types of hitters, which the Data Monster kind of shows that they are, it kind of says like, okay, there might be a lower batting average floor, which you already know with those guys. And it's just kind of taking into account certain in-zone swing rates, out-of-zone swing rates, things of that nature. It's unique by every single player.
So you're telling me this should be called rabbithole.com? Because you're just going to, like, this is crazy. Like, so I'm on the hitting leaders page. We're just going to keep, this is the fun part about having my own show. We can just divert right now.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the hitting leaders. So we're on the Data Monster now.
Yeah.
And so like you said, there's whiffs, end zones. You can pick whatever you want there. Yeah, you can have a lot of fun with this. Yeah. Can you, and you can do multiple players at once, it looks like I'm seeing here, so you can type in more than one.
Yeah, you should be able to.
Okay, no, I'm just trying to play with this. This is pretty cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to play with this some more. So when you start dissecting all this, like this could be used for DFS purposes when you see certain teams yes. facing certain pitchers, which I could see being fun. You mentioned a breaking ball leaderboard eventually, and I totally understand. You won't have the time for it right now. But once you have all that, and I'm pretty sure your player already thought out the big plan, but just out of curiosity as to somebody that might consume it, would you have it eventually where you can pull up just one player and have the chart for fastball and breaking balls all in one for like the one player?
That would be absolutely the goal. All of this stuff is on Tableau right now, and I am very much a novice at Tableau, hoping to learn the ropes sooner rather than later, try and get that all up to make it as pretty as Alex Chamberlain's pitch leaderboard. That would be pretty legit. But yeah, that would be the goal, just to get that all-encompassing profile. I think that's what we all want.
That, and then the other part I was curious of, like right now on your barrel board, it's 18 versus 1920.
Yeah.
Do you ever plan on having it where it's like up to date to the day of like gameplay?
That's definitely a long-term goal, I would say. I'm not good enough at coding or things of that nature yet. Paul Mimino, though, the guy behind the Data Monster, he's really good at coding. I think that is something that if we put together, put our heads together, I think that is something that we could do down the road. Given that barrels are so sticky, I think that would make sense just to keep getting it updated. Because we would know significant changes by, like, probably May.
Exactly. I don't think you could – because, when we look, when like Savant first started, or even on stuff on Fangraphs, the rolling graphs tools, you start seeing like a 3-week sample or a 2-week sample, and all of a sudden you see these things change, and you're just like, oh boy. So you start throwing the barrel stickiness into that, and you're like, okay, something's changing big time now. Or all of a sudden, this guy that couldn't hit off speed pitches is hitting off speed pitches. Did he do something different?
Exactly.
And then you can be ahead of the curve type.
Exactly. Stuff. Yep. And I feel like I got some validation from this because Eno Saris just came out with a barrel article today, and Harrison mm-hmm. Bader was in it. And he's one of the guys that I highlighted in my article 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to start the hashtag Bader bro and see how far it gets me.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah. If Eno's onto something and you're on it as well, that's always a good thing, but that never stinks. So that's pretty fun there. I just keep scrolling through this thing, and it just mesmerizes me on the different ideas behind it, the different names. Any other takeaways you'd like to tell the listeners as they're going through it? Like you did the comparisons, you looked at in the article, you have Gary Sanchez and Lau, like you mentioned, you broke down their whiff rates and all that kind of stuff. There's Harrison Bader, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other takeaways you'd like to give them for now? Is it still kind of as you said before, it's still kind of a work in progress and everything? But what's your goal with it for your fantasy analysis for 2021?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think overall, like, I want this to drive engagement amongst the fantasy community. I think that there's so many different statistics out there that people kind of get lost in the weeds. And I think that barrel rate should stand out as one of the prominent ones we use. And I kind of want the audience to take this in and ask me the questions so I can help, get the community to learn more about certain players. For example, doing this analysis, I found out that Gary Sanchez had a 0.000 average on 30 fastballs down the middle last year. Like, I probably wouldn't have found that out otherwise, unless I was looking, at his barrel rate, went down to the plate discipline, saw that, things of that nature. I really want to give people those edges to help win their leagues. That's the ultimate goal. I think that's why we're all kind of doing this, to help each other out.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. So I'm looking forward to where this continues to go. I'm probably going to pick your brain on it some more. I guess I'll ask you this right now, because I have it open in Tableau. Are all the players not in this pool?
There should be 400. I'm going to quote my article. 477 hitters should be on there because they had at least one barrel in 18 and at least one in 19 or 20.
On a fastball, I'm assuming.
Yeah, on a fastball.
Yeah, wow, so Keston Hiro is not a barrel one in one of those.
Because he wouldn't play. He debuted 18. In 19. Duh, that's idiot. Why.
I just thought about it. Once you just said it, and it dawned on me. I'm sitting here scrolling for him, like, he's not here. Where is he?
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, it makes 100% sense now. See? This is why you're the smart one. But all right, this is pretty cool stuff. I'm going to enjoy playing with this some more. But let's head over to Points League Drafts. And I think this is a lot of fun because in or at least this season alone, but in recent years, like best balls, have been picking up steam in on Fantrax and other sources, and those are points leagues. But there's already been points leagues going for a while. We just don't talk about it as much because in the mainstream, it's Roto and it's head-to-head. But points leagues are big. I got points leagues head-to-head. There's all kinds of different formats to go off of here. You just wrote an article at Fantasy Pros talking about some players' values that change based on points leagues. Just for like the starting point here, because we're going to kind of do like an open strategy discussion here. What's your what do you see the difference between like a Roto league and a points league that when you go into a points league draft, you've changed your thought process on?
I'm not sure if this is like a hot take or like a lukewarm take, but I feel like points leagues replicate real life baseball a little bit more because it takes into account how deep a starter can get into a game. It takes into account guys who get on base more. And as we haven't fully adapted to OBP leagues, we're still on average leagues. I think points leagues really get us there. And I think that, you know, I kind of hit on the main things I'm looking for, but really it's those guys who walk, like Carlos Santana, guys who get hit by pitches, Anthony Rizzo, all the time, guys who don't necessarily hit a lot of homers, but hit a lot of extra base hits. And there's for hitters a lot less of a focus on steals since they're typically one, not worth as much in points leagues, and two, you get dinged for usually caught steals. So a guy like Adalberto Mondesi, like he could steal 50 bases. One, that's not as big of a deal in points leagues. And two, if he has like an 80% success rate, he's probably still getting caught around 10 times. So it's like a net of like 40 stolen bases, which isn't as big of a deal as just the full-blown stolen bases you would get in Roto. For pitching, I'm really focusing on innings pitched and guys who typically pitch for better teams because wins are worth a lot. Maybe one day that will change as, you know, our game advances, but that's how it is now. So if I'm in a tiebreaker between a guy on, you know, the Yankees versus a guy in the Orioles, I'm probably going to take the Yankees guy in points league.
Yeah, no, this just kind of lines up with some of the best ball strategies I've been discussing the points format. And I like how it's true that it does line up with real baseball more, like you said, because there's certain teams that value stolen bases, certain teams that don't. But, you know, you go to certain teams that, like, I'm a Giants fan. We don't hit a lot of home runs, but there's a lot of doubles and extra base hits involved, and we win some baseball games. So right. it's not – there's different ways to play baseball. So I do appreciate that with the best ball league. And it makes drafting best ball teams much – or not points league teams. I'll keep trying to say points league. Points league teams different because, like you said, is, you know, in a Roto league, Mondesi's going in – late round two, early round three these days. Right. Where in a points league, I think he's going like round five or six in some of the best ball points leagues I was doing. And that's just because people wanted Mondesi. Like he could have kept falling.
He should have kept falling. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very possible. And I think it really, the biggest thing that I do when I go into a draft is I look at OBP. Like that just makes like you mentioned it, like guys that walk more and everything. I want guys that just get on base and then things can accumulate from there. Cause you're thinking about just accumulating stats. Right. Not a specific stat per se, but just accumulating stats. And I think that's very, very important. And then pitching, I agree with you. One thing, you could literally leave a points league draft with zero relievers or zero closers if you want.
Yep.
Can you expand on that? I know you kind of hit on it, but can you expand on why that is and why it makes sense?
Absolutely. So one, closers and relievers, they're not pitching as many innings. You typically get 1 point per out. So if a closer's only pitching three outs, you know, twice a week, plus a save or two, saves are worth, you know, a decent amount of points, but nothing like a win. Based on that, relievers are just like, it's not the focal point at all.
Well, yeah, and just to elaborate on that some more, like you mentioned, like you get a closer, say he pitches three innings in a week. He gets, you know, he gets your nine outs, but he gets you one save and like six strikeouts.
Right.
That's great. Now you have a starting pitcher of 7 innings, strikeout 8, get a win. Like he just trumps all over your deal. So if you can literally put, say you would have had 3 relievers in your lineup that week, substitute that in for 3 starters, maybe one of them's a 2-start pitcher that week, you're flying through the point system.
Exactly. And typically you get dinged negative points for blown saves.
Yes, exactly.
So it's like if a save is worth 5 or 7 points or whatever, but then a blown save is like negative 3 or negative 5 points with how volatile saves are, that's a lot of risk to take on.
Yeah, it's very, very volatile. And a lot of the starting pitchers in points leagues also get quality starts points. So even if they don't get the W, it's like it can be like 6 points for a quality start and like 10 points for a win or something.
Right. Yeah. You're really compounding there. And even if they do take the loss, if they're still on a quality start, you're probably netting to around 0 points rather with their reliever who, you know, pitches one inning, strikes out two, but puts two guys on. That's only like 3 positive points.
Yeah. It's there's much more, I guess, cushion with your starters than a reliever is the best way I'll say it. So, and part of me, I think when you go in a points draft, if you do want relievers, A, wait till later, and B, I'm cool with taking like the Freddy Peralta types, like we talked about earlier, that might throw 3 innings in the middle, but you know, they're in line for wins. Like you're not worried about the saves. Like the way the Dodgers use Julio Urias in the playoffs. Yeah. Give me guys like that.
Yeah. Like here's a deep name. Yasmeiro Petit, the guy in the Oakland A's. Like he regularly pitches like 80 to 90 innings out of the pen, which is a recipe for wins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great one. So that's something to think about. Or yeah, I guess the best way I can say it, if you don't go for the long guys like the Petits, Peraltas, which I think is the way to go, go for the 7th and 8th inning guys. They might run into saves later on, but if anything, most of the time they're not in the highest leverage situations. So when they're out there, they're getting the outs, getting some strikeouts, and making things work. So
yes,
it might run into some wins.
Yes. I think one of the reasons that points leagues aren't necessarily talked about as much is because I feel like those leagues are so customized based on points that it's hard to follow like one list.
Yeah.
But for guys who do projections, you should be able to reach out to those guys and say, hey, can you kind of input my points into your projections and see how it comes out? Like, I'm sure there are guys, you know, me at Roto Fanatic and others, you know, would be happy to do that. It's, you know, a relatively simple Excel formula if you already have those projections.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I know another simple one that I've used in the past, because like the Barf League's an OBP league. So again, not points, but has the same idea. You can go to the Fangraphs auction calculator and you can customize that and then plug in whatever set of projections you want. And it'll spit out values for you, which should give you an idea of where things kind of go. So I think that's good as well. When you're drafting, say, in a points league, and I haven't drafted in a real like season points league, only best balls, in a long time, but with pitching coming so important, starting pitching, how starting pitching heavy do you go?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I first started out in points leagues, when I was doing like the projections, I was saying, wow, these hitters really outscore all these pitchers. Why would you take a pitcher first? And I'm like, well, wait, it's the actual opposite. You can get hitters so much later. You need to push up the pitching. So if I could get one of the big 3 in Cole, DeGrom, or Bieber in the first round, you know, of a points league, I'm absolutely doing it. No questions asked. And even if I'm in the back end, even like middle to back end of that first round, you know, I've got guys like Giolito, Kershaw, like guys who are going to eat innings. I think you can make a case for them definitely being in the first round.
Yeah. And you mentioned the eat innings parts. Do you see certain pitchers that maybe in like a roto format that you're not so excited about, but in a best or a points league, there's Dallas Keuchels of the world that are boring, but get pitched a lot of innings, maybe still not in points, but I think he has some validity there. We know Kyle Hendricks, he's picked up steam over the last few years, but for a long time, he wasn't too exciting. Do you see yourself more attracted to some of those guys instead of the flashy high strikeout volatile guys, or do you still like both?
I mean, I definitely like these innings eaters. When I was listening to the tag team podcast that Matt Williams and Mike Simeone did, they drafted Marcus Stroman and Sandy Alcantara on their same team in Roto, and I almost turned it off just because I don't like either of them in Roto because Alcantara, he has a high walk rate and he only has like a 22% strikeout rate. And if he's pitching 180 innings with that high strikeout rate and his ground ball rate, the whip is going to be high. And you're carrying that whip for like an additional 30, 40, even 50 innings on some of these guys. And that really compounds on your whip and your ERA, in my opinion. So drafting guys who have high whips in Alcantara and Stroman and putting them on the same team in a roto league, I wouldn't do that personally. But in points leagues where that's not as big of a deal and you're getting so many more points for those innings pitched, give me those types of guys all day. Stroman, Alcantara, even Matthew Boyd, throw him on my team.
Well, see, that there's why we talk about it, because like Boyd, I'm guilty of, obviously, if you're in a standard redraft points league, you wouldn't be going as deep as this. But in 40 and 50 round leagues I've been doing, I have a ton of Danny Duffy just because he's the SP1 for the Royals.
Right.
Like he's pitching every fifth day. And then in best ball, if he has bad weeks, you just kind of, they don't count him. So that's nice too. But so different in your points from where you have to play them. But to the point is, you mentioned Boyd, I mentioned Duffy. You can take some of the uglier names.
Yes.
Like, it's really not going to kill you. And so that's where the strategy comes into play that I kind of want to get your thought on. So I'm with you. I go pitching heavy early. And then it feels like after I have, like, I don't go like three in a row or whatever, but I want to kind of get two to three big time arms early if I can that I just know are going to be there. Then I feel like I can take a break for a while and like load up on bats. They have a confident kind of starting offense that I like. And then I can just backload on a lot of these pitchers that I just know are going to get innings. They're in the rotation, all these kind of deals. Do you have a similar philosophy, or how do you go about attacking the draft as a whole?
If I'm in a league and I know my league mates, I know that they're not as, they don't have that perception that innings eaters should go earlier. I will absolutely take that break, draft those guys that we talked about. Even like John, like if you're in a deeper league, like John Lester, like he's going to eat innings. Like he's not that great anymore, but that's another guy who you can target. But if I'm in a pretty competitive league and guys are pushing, starting pitching up early, I might not necessarily take that break depending on the arms available. For example, I probably like Chris Paddock to bounce back more than the average fantasy analyst or, someone in a competitive league. So if I see him on the board in my range, I'm probably not taking that break. I'll probably pick him up, things of that nature. But otherwise, yeah, I'm generally in agreement with that.
Yeah, no, and I like that point you made. There's no set in the stone. Like when certain guys drop, you just go. And that brings up a side question that it's not even points related. Paddock and Lamet are two guys I struggle tremendously with San Diego, mainly because they have two pitches. And they're saying they're working on a third, but I still haven't seen it yet, and that terrifies me. You like Paddock. Okay, I'm not going to argue there because he's at least going at a reasonable price this year. Last year I was so anti. I was screaming. People argued with my rankings. I had him like ranked 45th or something. I'm like, just no. The whole point is do not take him where he's going. Like, no, it doesn't work. But Lamet, you're either in or you're out, pretty much what it feels like. But the interesting question I had is in the recent labor draft, Scott Pianowski took him, and he was all excited about taking him. And at first, I'm sitting there going, what are you doing, Scott? Like, I don't get it. But then I heard him explain it. And his explanation, I think he got him like in round 12.
Okay.
And something along those lines. And in theory, where his ADP or where he's going is much higher than round 12. And we know that if he stays healthy, which with him is a humongous if right now, he's much better than a round 12 pick. So he's basically like, you're talking about if Paddock falls, you take him. Like Lamet falling, he's like, okay, I couldn't like pass him anymore. It's just like at that point, not a points league question. Where do you stand on Nelson Lamet? Would you be willing to take a gamble on a guy like Nelson Lamet like Scott Pianowski took?
That is such a tough question
because I'm struggling with it.
I could tell you an answer, but I'm not in the draft right now. Yeah. And if I saw, like, my initial reaction is no, I'm not taking him unless it's like outside of pick, say 150. But if he's on the board at like 130, 135, I might think about it depending on my pitching. The thing I struggle with Lamet is like he could have three starts, be out for the year. Like we've seen that happen to him multiple times now. But even if he pitches the first half, gives you 16 starts, and then he goes on the injured list for the rest of the year, those 16 starts were probably better than a significant amount of guys that you probably drafted ahead of him because you were concerned about the injury risk. So it's kind of like I struggle with that question too. How is that kind of how you see it?
Yeah, that like you just hit one of the big parts that's starting to go for me is, okay, like I just pulled up his ADP for the month of February. He's going around pick 92, give or take. But now if we're talking around 12 in a 15-team league, we're back end of almost getting towards 200 range. Like we're like 170-ish. Big gap. You're talking 80 picks or so. And I'm with you. It gets to the point like – so like when you're drafting early, you need those guys to be your rocks. But back later on, like there's James Paxton now, which all of a sudden I wasn't in on before, but now I'm intrigued by his price
point.
Another guy that I haven't been able – like a similar feeling to Lamet that I have is Patrick Corbin. Just for the fact of where he's getting drafted, I'm still very hesitant because of the velocity change and everything. But the point to your question is where they're going now, say they take breaks or whatever, is 104, like 130 quality innings now better than what you want for like 180? And that's an interesting question. And that's where – because I used to be a big fan of that a couple years ago, like even with a guy like Steven Strasburg, I said, give me 150 good Strasburg innings because we know he's going to get hurt. but when he pitches, they're always very good.
Right.
And let me fill it in with some guy off the waiver wires while he's hurt. And right. then you put that together, and that's a pitcher. That's the conundrum with Nelson Lamet. Like, I was so anti-Lamet, and then this happened in labor, and it made me start thinking.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's an interesting conversation. It doesn't have to be just about Lamet.
Right.
It could be about, like I've mentioned, Paxton, like you just said, where he's going in drafts now, I am all on board. I'm like, let's do this. So does that make more sense on kind of where I'm? Because I think we're kind of on the same page here.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think the point hits home even more in this season when guys probably aren't even pitching 180 innings this year. It's going to be more around the 150 is probably the average. So 80 innings of Lamet looks way better now than it would 2 years ago, or hopefully in a year when things are back to normal.
I'll bring this back to the points league now, but it still kind of surrounds even Paxton and Lamet because they're playing on two of the teams so far that are rumored to have six-man rotations or that are heavily thinking about six-man rotations. Rob Silver came out with a great breakdown doing the math on, like, say, Yu Darvish. If he X amount, blah, 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 but now the six-man rotation, 44 fewer innings, 36 fewer strikeouts, whatever, something like that. A, that could help Lamet a ton. By letting him have that extra day's rest right. every time. That could be tremendous. Like, again, it makes the argument even stronger for later round Lamet. When you're in your points league drafts, though, back to this, where we talk about innings pitch being so important. In this year where innings pitched, we already know, like you said, are going to be down. Now a team potentially has a six-man rotation. Are you hesitant to approach those teams?
So I feel like I'm unique in the fact that I have like my own set of projections. They're based on Mike Podhorzer's projecting X. And I'm constantly updating projected starts based on when I hear about those six man rotations. So like the Padres having a six man rotation, like I'm already aware of it. I'm already filtering through how that, the adjustments I need to make there. So my draft strategy isn't necessarily like changing like on the fly in that regard. But say a guy like take Lamet, take another second, like the SP2 on another team. Let's say like Charlie Morton. I know that's not the best example because he has an injury history, but he's actually been pretty
good. It makes sense with what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably take Morton because he's got a relatively higher floor and he's probably pitching more innings.
Yeah. See, this is where I think that's why I'm glad we're just having this discussion on it because I think everyone's just looking at six-man rotation as a negative. And I think there could be some positives to glean from this.
Yes.
And I talked with Simeone about it a few weeks ago on my show, and he said, you know, you look at the Mariners last year, they did it a lot with Kikuchi, where he had an extra day almost before every start, and look how much better he was last year. The velo was up every start. So it goes back to our original point. Okay, he threw fewer innings. It could have resulted in fewer strikeouts. But he might have got you more wins. His ratios might be great, and he's popping the glove and doing his thing. And instead of going 5 to 6 innings every start, maybe he's pushing 7 almost every start, maybe 8. Like he's doing things that just kind of keep compiling for you.
Right.
And that's where Paxton, I think, going to Seattle's awesome. Like I'm a big fan of that.
Right.
Do you see any other guy? We're just spitballing. We mentioned Corbin, Paxton, Lamet. Are there any other guys, and you mentioned Morton, that all of a sudden with kind of the talking around different changes and the innings concerns all of a sudden look a little more appealing than they once did?
So I've got a few names left here. And this first guy I'm going to mention, it kind of goes in the opposite direction of what we're talking about. Dylan Cease.
Oh, I love it though. Okay. Talk to me.
The White Sox have no rotation depth. Ronaldo Lopez is probably going to be their 5, Kopech in the pen to start out. It's absurd. Cease should pitch a ton of innings this year. And in a points league, that's what we want. And he has so much upside to be a breakout, to have breakout potential, right? In a roto league, I'm still probably staying away a little bit just because of the ratios. But in a points league, I want that all day.
Yeah, I love the Cease call. ADP at 337 in the month of February. He's a guy that I've said time and time again. All right, so I'm glad you mentioned Dylan Cease because he's very, very tilting. Like a DFS circles, he's fun because you can pick him where you want to use him from time to time. But he can be so annoying at times because his control is an issue. His stuff's amazing. Like if he ever locks it in, he's so, so good. I mentioned he's going way into the 300s in picks right now. When you look at him, just like on projections, like on Fangraphs and everything, people, I don't know, he's kind of all over the board, but like mid fours ERA, if not higher, but still almost a K per inning. Where do you see Dylan Cease going this year? Because all the early reports out of camp are pretty high.
I mean, I still don't see him being the guy that everyone wants him to be this year. I think that's going to take another year or two. But where he's going in the draft, there's really not a whole lot of risk. After pick 300 is what, like SP7, SP8-ish territory? Like, that is definitely worth the risk because he's going to get those innings one way or another. Even if he's ineffective, like, he's probably still going to pitch just because that rotation is just kind of like a big three and then a lesser big three, small three.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great call. Yeah, they got their big guys up top and the back end's iffy. It's just crazy to me that so Cease is going at 392, Kopech's going at 297, and they already said they're going to baby his innings. Like, I'd be shocked if he starts more than a handful of games this year. And so I don't understand that at all, personally.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I might be on the high end here, but I've got Cease plugged in for like 170, 175 innings pitched just because there's no one behind him who would take a spot. I do have the mid four ERA as well, which is kind of a bummer, but it's probably realistic. Yeah. So
no, it's very realistic. And if he gives you those innings, you can kind of like go, okay, we'll make that work because he's going to get you so many strikeouts. And on that offense, with that offense behind him, probably a lot of wins too. So that'll be very, very promising as well. What brought on our points league discussions is the article you wrote at Fantasy Pros about players' values that change between points leagues and categories leagues. And you already talked about Adalberto Mondesi for obvious reasons, like you mentioned, stolen bases and everything else. But you have Lou – I call him Lou Bob – Luis Robert on here. What is it that changes so much for you? You have Roto ranked 34, points ranked 90.
Yeah. I know that's kind of surprising, but the main driver of that is – there's two main points. One, he derives a lot of his value from steals. A lot of people projecting him for 25 to 30 bags. Like we talked previously, those just don't mean as much in points leagues. He does have a pretty good success rate, 80%+, similar to Mondesi, but still, we know that steals don't mean as much. And two, he strikes out all the freaking time, about 30%. We saw how bad his September was. I don't necessarily see him cutting down drastically, even to like 25-26%. I still see him being in the upper 20%, and that really drags down his value because you're typically getting minus one for every strikeout.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense because that's his big bugaboo right now, is that batting average and just point discipline as a whole is very tilting. And then for those that have looked at the article, you have a couple of first basemans here, but one that is guy that I'm just loving in a big way is Carlos Santana in Kansas City, hitting in the middle of that order. If you want to talk OBP, that's your guy. Like, that's pretty awesome stuff. So he comes into play. But you mentioned on some other notables, I just wanted to ask you on Jaime Candelario. What is it you see for a points format for Jaime Candelario?
Yeah, I mean, the default answer to those questions really is walk rate. He's an absolute beast at walks. Like, he's over double-digit walk rate. And where he's getting drafted, so I'm not sure of his ADP right now. It's at least – it's like it's post 225, I would have to say. You got it pulled up.
I got it right here. 264. Yeah.
So, like, the fact that he's going so late in Roto and that the fact that he walks so much just bumps him up so much. And I believe he has first base and third base eligibility, which is also significant. But really, it's those walks that are just driving him up.
That makes a lot of sense. On some of the fallers, you have Nick Madrigal, which I don't understand why he's getting drafted where he's getting drafted to begin with in a Roto league. So obviously in a points league, he's the number nine hitter, people. Number nine hitter for the White Sox. He's he won't hit for any power. If you want a guy like his profile, maybe a few less steals, wait and get Luis Arias later on. That's what I'd recommend. But you have Tim Anderson on this list. And this is a fun one for me because, you know, we can already until we're blue in the face. Is the BABIP sustainable? Batting average sustainable? Whatever. But obviously he doesn't walk a lot. Is that the biggest reason he falls here?
Yeah, he doesn't walk a lot. I know he's a little controversial with steals. Like, he'll steal a ton at one time and then he won't steal any for like half a season. But really it's that he doesn't walk a whole lot at all.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Pitching fallers, you have Michael Kopech right there. Yep. But you have a lot of these are the rookies, and I'm guessing it's an innings thing. McKenzie,
it's all innings. Howard. Do not draft a young guy in a points league.
Sixto Sanchez. Yeah, no, this makes a lot of sense. That's why stands out like a sore thumb. So it's kind of everything we talked about before. If people want to come read this article, you're going to see why it comes into play because Carmen, you know, paints a nice picture for you on this. But what I want to ask you is on the risers part, you mentioned Boyd, you mentioned Cease. Mm-hmm. Are all of these guys innings-based? Because like Marco Gonzalez is such a pit, like a tilting name for some right now in the Roto world. I love him because to me, he's kind of like the boring Dallas Keuchel, but better.
Yes.
So what do you have on Marco?
I mean, it's honestly mainly those innings, but I do see him with some upside. I know that Simeone loves the quote him saying that, you know, I want to prove people wrong. I want to be better. And kind of like how we talked about JD Martinez, you can't quantify will and determination in trying to make yourself better. And I see him doing that. Now he is, of course, going to be in that six-man rotation, but he's definitely making that start every sixth day. He's not going to get skipped. He's one of the few you can count on for at least 170 innings pitched this year.
Yeah, no, I love Marco. It's just my question for you, I guess, is what we're going to say is I know we're talking points here, but I'm going to pivot this back to a Roto format. Sure. Let me find his ADP here. His ADP is 170. Is that too high for you?
I feel like just a little bit because he doesn't necessarily have that strikeout upside that you'd want, which is kind of a killer there. But in terms of just like a steady, like I would say mid to high threes ERA, tons of innings, I think that's what you're going to get from him. And of course he's got a low walk rate, so he's going to have a low whip. I mean, that helps you out in three of the five categories for sure. I kind of depends on roster construction at that point. I know that's kind of like a cop-out answer, but if you've got guys like a Kershaw or like an Aaron Nola up top who are just going to give you a ton of innings, maybe Lance Lynn is your SP2. You're probably not targeting Gonzalez as, you know, in that range. But if you've got like Walker Buehler and kind of like, and you got like Ian Anderson and Sixto Sanchez, probably don't have all three of those guys on your team. But if you end up that way, you're definitely going to want to target Gonzalez as your SP4 there.
Yeah, Gonzalez is the perfect play. Like if you have your early starting pitcher picks are massive strikeout guys, so you're not really concerned about that, you can grab a Gonzalez to just help your ratios out in such a huge way. So yes. I like that quite a bit. Definitely something to look at there. If we were going to tell people that are maybe trying to get into a points league for the first time, we pretty much said OBP innings pitch. That's like that's kind of the two kind of starting points. Do you have any other recommendations on how they should start their research or anywhere they should go look? I know Fantasy Pros has points league rankings. Not sure if Roto Fanatic does or not. Not many sites do. So where would you kind of tell people to give a look?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Fantasy Pros is eventually going to come out with points leagues rankings that'll be helpful. On my website last year, I did have points leagues rankings up. If there is a lot of people want these points leagues, we can definitely make it happen at Roto Fanatic. I've got them ready. I know the guy who made Park Factors, Crosby Spencer, he's got his own projections coming very soon. He can do that as well. I think we would be happy to provide those if the demand is there.
Yeah, I don't know how big the demand is yet, but I think it's going to be coming just because, like you said, we've seen more leagues already kind of try to go to the quality start from the win, and then their saves and holds and OBP and like the Tout Wars League I'm going to be in, literally, I don't know if experimental is the right word. It's a new league with a new format where instead of wins, it's innings pitched, and instead of saves, it's saves and holds.
Yep.
So like they Ron Chandler wants to try new things out. So we're mixing and matching things. Basically, it's turning into a points league. Is what it's turning into without, but it's still going to be Roto. And so I think in that essence, we're going to start seeing more and more leagues go to it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how that goes.
Absolutely. I think two other key points I'd like to make. I think that points leagues are a great way for kind of a beginner in fantasy baseball to get started because you don't have to worry about roster construction necessarily as much, aside from the fact that you probably want to push up pitching a little bit more. But you don't in Roto, you have to worry about balancing, you know, 10 categories between hitters and pitchers, whereas you're just looking at points in total. I think that's a lot easier for people to manage. And then two, if you're pressed for time, I would kind of go to Fangraphs and basically do like sort by a filter of high walk rate, filter for like, say, maybe like over 40 to 50 doubles from 19 and 20 combined and see who kind of doesn't have a lot of home runs next to their name. Because they're probably going lower in Roto because homers count in Roto, not in points. But if they're hitting a lot of extra base hits, I think that's a guy you would want to target who you could get a slight edge on because no one else is probably looking at that.
That's a phenomenal point. Like that really is because no one's looking at those guys. And that's sneaky good. That's interesting because they do stand out a lot because they're still getting on base. They're getting doubles. They're in scoring positions. They're probably scoring runs. They're probably hitting for an okay average. Like that's very intriguing. And then I like your pitching side of it there. Look at that scenario as well. So that could be quite telling. That's a new one. I have not heard that scenario yet. It's very, very intriguing. Let's get into our listener questions. It's like a 4-part listener question. So this will be fun. I love it when we get these. It's just like, let's bring out the gamut here.
Yes.
So, where is it? I have it right here. Davey Lou at sports_nut51 asks, who are your top 10 first basemen targets in points leagues? I'll give you the floor because I don't have points rankings. Sure. I can tell you some guys that stand out to me that should be in the top 10, but who do you have?
So I've got my top 10. How about you say yay or nay based on this list? All right. So Freeman, number one, Bellinger, two, Rizzo, three, just like between his OBP and his hit by pitch rate, it's just like he goes insanely up. Jose Abreu, Paul Goldschmidt. I'm higher on Goldschmidt and Roto than most. So maybe you don't like him at number five there. DJ LeMahieu, he kind of falls in points leagues. Doesn't walk a ton. Vlad Guerrero Jr. I know that's a controversial name in general. Yeah. 42 pounds lost this offseason. Not sure if that's honestly like the best thing for him because he might not be as familiar with this new body of his with his timing and his stance. I mean, I'm not a professional hitter, but that's something that I think we have to take into consideration. And then rounding out this list, I got Pete Alonso, Matt Olson, and Mike Moustakas.
Okay. The name, I love the Rizzo at three. That's one I thought should have definitely got a bump up there. I love Carlos Santana, but I understand he's not in the top 10.
He's 11th. I mean,
I could see arguments to make him in there, but I'm not going to argue that because I get it. The arguing one I have, and maybe it's because I have a soft spot for him, but when it comes to OBP leagues, I think he's tremendous, is Rhys Hoskins.
All right.
Now, when it comes to OBP, let me pull it up here so I don't completely misquote it, because even when he struggles to get an average up there, his OBP is good. He's been 396, 354, 364, 384 in his career. So he's never crushed you in OBP. Even when he hit 226, he had a 364 OBP. His walk rate's no lower than 13% in his career. And then if you look at his 2019 and 2018 numbers, like the batting average dropped tremendously, but a lot of the other peripherals were like almost in sync with previous seasons, if not better in some instances. So I'd have to dig in deeper, like Savant and everything. I think he just gets really overlooked because the average is kind of a bugaboo, but in an OBP points type system, I think Rhys Hoskins deserves a little more love.
I think he's lower on my list just because of a function of his off-season injury.
Yeah.
And I have him plugged in right now for 600 plate appearances. If he's fully healthy, he's probably approaching 650 to 675, and then he would easily be on that top 10. So that's the only qualm I have with him.
And the guy I'd probably replace, and this is one where people get mad at me a lot, but you already have him lower than most, is Pete Alonso. Only for the fact that I don't think he's a batting average guy, which is going to affect his OBP. But the recent reports at a Mets camp is with all the depth they've added, they love Dom Smith's defense at first base. So there's maybe not a complete platoon, but you're going to see Dom Smith there more. And if anything, late in games as a defensive replacement. So those are at bats you're going to be losing from Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. A career double-digit walk rate, which we love in points leagues, of course. He does strike out at a career 26% of the time, which is higher than league average, so he gets a bit of a dock there. I think where we're going to differ potentially is those plate appearances. I've got him at, let's see. I've got him at 625 plate appearances.
Yeah, I'm just spitballing off the top of my head. I'd be willing to knock off maybe 100.
Oh, wow.
If the talks that they are serious about defense, because they loaded up on pitching, so they want to support their guys.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe injuries take place and they move guys around, but they want J.D. Davis on the field. They want Dom Smith on the field. So there's a point where 100 is probably too much. I get it, but if we just say 40% of the games, because as a defense replacement, there's 40 at-bats right there.
Right.
And then say he starts, he platoons a fifth of the time. So there's 20% more. That's what, let's say 80, like seven, no, probably like 50 at-bats. So we're getting close to 100. If you start penciling it out, it just gets interesting. A little more interesting there.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't taken him in a mock or a real draft this offseason. I feel like when I see the name Matt Olson, I just think of upside. And he's right after Alonso, so I feel like I'm more apt to target him.
Yeah, I love Alonso. I've I've preached last year I'd take Olsen over Alonso. And now that Olsen had that horrible batting average last year, people are so scared of him. But he was still a good OBP guy, like you're basically pointing out. And I don't think that average was like, I think the lowest of the low for him. Like, that's not happening again. He's at least like a 240 to 250 hitter.
Yeah.
And if he's doing that, if not better, his OBP is going to be great. He's going to hit you 40 home runs.
Like, yeah, I took a dive on Olsen. I couldn't, and he had one of the lowest BABIPs in 2020. And BABIP in itself is not a leading indicator of anything going forward. But I did a deep dive to understand how he got that low BABIP, and I couldn't find any difference or change in his plate discipline or basically where he hit the ball, how hard he hit the ball that would render basically like a bottom 10 BABIP. Like, we know that's going to bounce back.
Yeah, it seemed like he just got extremely unlucky at times. It was just a weird deal. But overall, I'm pretty much with you. Greece is my biggest one. I love that you moved Rizzo up, because Rizzo and Goldie in Roto are kind of getting disrespected. I'm with you on Goldie too. It's one of those guys, I used to never draft either one of them. But now where they're going, you sit there and you look and you're like, am I really passing this up right now? Like,
right.
It's not, they're not sexy at all, but they're consistent as they can. Like, you can almost pencil them in right now. As long as they stay healthy, you're getting this stat line.
Exactly.
That's very comfortable.
Yeah. Goldschmidt has averaged over 675 plate appearances, I think, for like the past like 6 years. Like, yeah, we know what we're getting with him. I don't understand why he's going so late.
And I think there's two things. It was his first year last year with the Cardinals, so I'm going to kind of let that kind of sink in, and I see him being better. Plus, I kind of write off a lot of the Cardinals situation last year with the COVID and having all the double headers and everything. Those guys were in a world of God knows what. So, like, I see Goldie having a much better year this year. Plus, Arenado's going to be hitting behind him. There's a lot. Carlson's full season. There's a lot to like about the Cardinals, which is scary because Twitter loves the Cardinals.
Yeah, as a Cubs fan, I don't love that either.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough. All right, next question he has here. Any over 250? Yeah, you mentioned Votto in your article. Santana's there. There's going to be a handful of them. Past 250 for sure.
Yeah, then a couple other guys I didn't mention in the article include Miguel Cabrera.
That's a great one.
Yeah, he's an excellent points league target in deep leagues. Even a guy like Brandon Belt, like, he walks double digits. We talked about Candelario, and this will be an interesting one. Evan White, he had an awesome walk rate last year. Struck out pretty much every time he didn't walk, but he walked.
Yeah, no, two things there. The Belt comment, I'm with you. Big time. I drafted him in OBP leagues almost yearly as a late like corner infielder or something, because, you know, don't expect him to do what he did with last year with power. Like, that's, AT&T is not going to do that for him. I've preached, put him in any other ballpark and he's a 25 plus home run guy every season.
Yep.
So, but he walks a ton and he's going to continue to do that. So I think that's a great call. And then Evan White, I've actually gone to bat with him. I wrote articles about him last year, and I did a little bit about him this year for some pieces. You mentioned the BABIP and then the strikeouts. If you look back to any other season he had in the minors, anywhere else, none of this stuff looked like Evan White. Like, you just start breaking down everything he did. I think he was pressing in his first year. I would be shocked if he didn't bounce back and have a very nice year this year. Like, everything that could go wrong went wrong for the kid. It was just a bad deal. All right. Are there any picks over 250 ADP second base gems and points leagues that stand out to you?
Oh man. All right. I forgot about this part of the question. Full transparency. I'll let you run with it and I'll say yes or no.
No problem. Let me just second base. We're gonna go post 250. And obviously this is for Roto. I don't have a points league ADP. But guys that stand out to me, I'm a huge Colton Wong fan, especially in OBP leagues. He's been leading off for the Brewers. He's 265. I take him in Roto leagues, OBP leagues, and points. You're even better because he's gonna walk a ton and score a lot of runs for Milwaukee. So I think that one's intriguing. Tommy Listel, if he's got regular playing time, he walks a lot as well. He'll be leading off for the Giants at 330. Jonathan Scope doesn't walk a lot, but pick 360 is intriguing. Cesar Hernandez at 377, leading off for Cleveland. He's another one. So those are a few, and there's more if you like.
I'll drop one.
Yeah.
Adam Frazier. He's going to play every day. And he walks a good amount. I think you said David Fletcher as well.
Yep.
Just like guys who are going to accumulate plate appearances and walk a lot. That's the guys you want in those deep targets for sure.
Yeah, basically, if you can get guys, like you said, the plate appearances, just to say it even easier, if you got guys that are hitting first or second and you're getting them this late in drafts, go get them. Yeah, like that's pretty sweet. That's why I love Colton Wong. It's like Cesar Hernandez, never appreciated. He's picked 377.
He's probably hitting lead on.
Yep. So it's crazy stuff. The other question he has, who do you target in points leagues more so than in roto leagues? Essentially, which players get the biggest jumps in value? We kind of hit on that, but do you want to reiterate real quick?
Yeah, for hitters, you're looking at guys who walk a lot, get hit by pitches a lot, like Anthony Rizzo. And you're looking at guys who get a lot of extra base hits that aren't home runs. And you're trying to fade guys who steal a lot of bases, like Mondesi and Luis Robert. For pitching, you're really focusing on those innings, those veteran innings eaters, kind of fading guys like Tristan McKenzie and Sixto Sanchez, who probably won't get a lot of innings this year. And I'm trying to look for guys who pitch on good teams as well, although wins can be fickle.
Yeah, they can be fickle. But that'll wrap us up. I've had a blast, even with the technical difficulties, chatting with you. I apologize for that, but that's always fun. The podcast version, that'll be edited out. The video version, that's going to be what it is. But before we take off, why don't you let everybody once again know where they can find you and what do you have coming up that they can look forward to?
Yeah, so you can
find besides your little one.
yes, besides the baby coming in a few weeks. Yes, yeah. You guys can find me at Carms Clubhouse on Twitter. My main work is being done at Roto Fanatic. Like we said, you can find my fastball barrel board out now, hopefully getting up and off speed and breaking ball barrel board soon. Paul Mimino and I are trying to work on this project where we're trying to understand innings pitched increase jumps and how that impacts K minus BB percentage. We know that K minus BB percentage is the most predictive of all pitcher stats. And we want to see based on how those innings increase lead to increase in performance or decrease in performance. No promises on that analysis getting done with everything going on, but we're going to try our best.
That sounds pretty cool. Cause especially in this era right now where we might have fewer innings pitched, like, okay, well, if we knock them back 30 innings pitched, does this increase? That's intriguing.
That'd be hugely helpful for 2022 as innings really ramp back up after that.
Yeah, that'll be cool to check out. But yeah, Carmen, thanks for joining me, man. I really appreciate it. I look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely, Bub. And again, congrats on Tout Wars.
Appreciate it. Really, really appreciate it. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 345. Go check out Carmen Mayorano on Twitter at Carms Clubhouse and at RotoFanatic Fantasy Pros. All the good stuff. We'll catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.